Welcome to Multifamily Real Estate Investing, presented by Mara Poling. My name is Pat Poling. I'm the founder and CEO of Mara Poling, and I'll be with you for the next 20 or 25 minutes as we chat about another interesting topic in multifamily real estate investing, and that of the swan investor, sleep well at night. This is an area we focus on quite a bit. There's lots of different ways to invest in commercial real estate, and we fully expect that everyone has not only some sweep well at night kinds of investments, investments like we do that are on the more secure and stable end, but potentially some more speculative investments, and those are great. That's not what we focus on. We focus on this swan portion of the world, and that's what we want to talk a little bit about today is what does it mean and how do you achieve this goal of sleeping well at night? So that's what we're going to chat about. If you have questions, feel free to shoot me an email, pat@marapoling.com, marapoling.com. And feel free to swing by the website, marapoling.com. Lots of good information there as well. So let's get started. Before I describe how we do it, let's talk about why it's valuable. So lots and lots of folks out there, many of you included, are looking to invest in real estate. Maybe they've been, or maybe you have been, primarily a stock and bond investor. And maybe you've been putting your money in index funds because you like the security and stability of that, although it still moves with the market and maybe moves quite a bit. You're looking to add something that has a greater degree of stability, and that's part of the interest in looking at multifamily real estate. Well, that's what we want to do. We want to help folks that are looking to participate in the benefits and all the upside that's associated with commercial multifamily real estate and do so in a way that allows them to sleep well at night so that they're not up tossing and turning, that you aren't worrying about, oh my gosh, what has happened to my hard-earned investment dollar? All of you work hard for your money. Everybody does. And whether your investment portfolio is a function of money you have saved over time, or potentially some funds that you have inherited from a family member who worked very diligently and then entrusted those to you, and you are the steward of those dollars, it's really important that those be invested intelligently and in a way that you aren't worried that you've maybe made a huge mistake. That's important to all of the clients that we work with, and it's important to us, and it's important for two reasons. The first sounds really noble. It's because we don't want people worrying at night. We don't want any of our clients or any of you that are out there. We don't want any of you worrying that you've put your money someplace that you shouldn't have, that this was a bad decision. Now, you can't eliminate all risk, but we're talking about taking a lot of risk off the table so that, again, it allows everyone to sleep well at night. Like I said, that sounds really noble. At the same time, I want to sleep well at night, and so does Bill and the rest of our team. We don't want to lay there tossing and turning, thinking, oh my gosh, what have we done with so-and-so's hard-earned money they entrusted to us? Have we put it into an investment that didn't make any sense? We want to sleep well at night. We want all of you to sleep well at night, and that's the reason we have this methodology. So I'm just going to talk about a few things that we do to help us, all of us, sleep well at night. Again, a lot of this is going to be applicable to those of you that are building your own portfolios, maybe a few single family rentals, or you've got a duplex or something like that. For those of you that are looking to invest with a partner, someone like Mara Poling, then these absolutely are items that you'll find value in. So first off, and these are not in any particular order, I simply say first off because it's at the top of the list I scribbled together for all this. Where we invest. We've talked before about the fact that there are lots of markets you can invest in the country, probably every market in the country you could invest in and make money. It is easier, i.e. less risky, to do so in markets that are growing by virtue of population faster than the U.S. average, that are experiencing job growth faster than the US average, that are experiencing income growth faster than the US average, that have reasonable cap rates, that have appropriate balanced regulation in place, and so on and so on and so on. And that's what we do every year, is we look at all of the markets in the United States and perform that analysis. And a large number of the markets that fit that description are located in Texas. And that's one of the reasons why we've had such a focus in Texas. Doesn't mean you couldn't make money investing in Denver or Miami or Atlanta or Cleveland or Charlotte or any number of other markets in the country. It simply means there's less risk if you invest in these markets that have a history over the last 10, 5 years, and a forecast going forward of this kind of growth and stability. Generally speaking, you're not going to find these markets on a list of hot markets to invest in. By definition, we're looking for stable markets that are stable and performing better than average, not markets that are the latest craze in terms of where to put money. Next, Class B, the Goldilocks class. We love Class B assets. They're buffered by A's and C's when we move throughout the economic cycle. That's a wonderful opportunity for us. Class B's are abundant. There's a large number of Class B's that are out there. One of the most critical reasons we like Class B's is the fact that in many instances, if not every instance, we're dealing with a static supply. There is no new Class B product coming to market. Now, there is something that looks like that. It's government subsidized, and government subsidies put restrictions often on rents and incomes and other items that are involved, which makes them function not really like a market asset. So in terms of new market level product coming to market, there effectively isn't any Class B development. So we've got all this rising demand, and we've talked about that before, and we're living in a space, Class B, where the supply is effectively static. Well, that sounds like a recipe for good, solid investing, right? So that's another reason we like Class B. We invest in performing assets. You can make some really big money rehabilitating properties, going out and finding properties that are in really rough shape, 50% occupied. You're going to empty the entire building and put 20,000 a door or 30,000 a door in it, and you're going to sell it in 18 or 24 months. Boy, what a great way to make a lot of money. And there's a lot of risk associated with that. That's not a bad investment. It's not a sleep well at night investment. It's a more risky investment. We're going to invest in performing assets. We may buy that very asset when they're done rehabilitating it, when they've got it to the point that it's been running stably for a period of time at 90% occupancy or better, with a stable and growing NOI, with a quality tenant base. Those are the kinds of assets we want to invest in, and that we would encourage you, if you're building your own portfolio, to look for assets that are already performing. It can be tempting to invest in something where they're going to have a bigger upside. It also means there's inherently more volatility in that investment. And that's one of the reasons to move into real estate, is to move away from, or at least balance the volatility in the equities markets. So we like to invest in performing assets. Occupancy is one of the ways that that's described, as I said. Another would be the quality of the tenants, stable rents. You know, we're looking for a trailing 12 financials that tell a positive story. So not just, you know what, it's had two good months. Well, two good months is two good months. We'd rather see 12 good months. Next up, modest leverage. We talked about this a couple of weeks back in terms of how much debt is the right amount of debt. And we're generally in that 70 to 75% range on the purchase side. We are bringing cash for all of the acquisition and closing costs, as well as the capital improvements. So we've got an effective leverage that's closer to something in the 60s. And then that number is going to trend down into the low 60s and then the 50s and into the high 40s. We recently had an asset that we sold as it got into the high 40s because we had a bunch of lazy equity that needed to get back to work. and that's the model you want to follow. How do we know the right level of leverage to take on? We use some stress tests, debt cover ratio, debt yield, those are two. Break-even occupancy, what's the minimum level of occupancy we have to have in order to maintain positive cash flow? And that's a very helpful metric in terms of determining, have we got enough buffer between what the historic high vacancy has been and what we have to be able to withstand? You want to have 150, maybe 200% of that in order to make that work. So using modest leverage is another way that we can all sleep well at night. The underwrite, being conservative in the underwrite. Now, certainly leverage is part of that in terms of the model. There's a lot of other items that go into the underwrite, and whether it's the amount of rent increase that's going to be forecasted over time, the cost of the capital in terms of the amount of capital that has to be deployed in each unit and on the property in total to make the improvements necessary to drive that financial performance, the existing or initial expenses and what the rate of growth of those particular expenses, the exit cap, what's the market going to look like when it comes time to exit that particular asset. All of those are items, in addition to obviously the purchase price when you are acquiring an asset, all of those are items that if you go in not even too aggressively, let's set aside being too aggressive with those. Let's just say that you went in and the inputs you put in were reasonable, right? You've gone out and done a study, for example, in the marketplace and identified that in the market, there's a $150 rent differential between the rents that the competition is getting for units that are improved and the current units in the target property. Well, you could underwrite that $150, and there's really nothing wrong with that. That's a reasonable expectation. That's the difference. You're going to go out and try to get that difference. And that difference is a function of an average of what the marketplace looks like, which means there's going to be some above that and some below. So you've got a pretty decent chance that you're going to hit that. Maybe it's a 50-50. We think 50-50 is, you know, too risky, at least for this sleep well at night model. It's a coin flip, and we don't think coin flips help you sleep well at night. So we like to nudge that over. So instead of it being a 50-50 proposition, it's maybe a 20% downside risk, right? We reduce that downside risk. And by the way, when you reduce the downside risk to 20%, because it has to add up to 100, you inevitably end up with an 80% chance of a more positive event. So in the example I just gave, that $150 rent differential that exists in the marketplace, instead of underwriting $150 of increase, you might underwrite 125 or 120 or 110 or some number in that range, where it's considerably more likely that you're going to get to that number. Now, that's not the operational strategy, right? The operational strategy is let's go get the full $150 because that is actually available to us out there. We just don't want to count on having that happen, right? So if you do that there and you do it for physical vacancy and you do it for bad debt and you do it for concessions and for exit cap and for the capital costs and for expenses and expense growth and so on, if you do that in each one of those steps, you're going to have a very conservative underwrite. And if the asset fits inside that model, then our confidence in it performing well goes up significantly. And our concern that it won't perform well is reduced. And that's the sleep well at night piece. That's how we get to this place where we can comfortably say this was a good investment. That does not mean there's no risk. If you want no risk investing, there's a thing called treasury bills. That's where you go put your money. That's about as zero risk as you're going to get. If you do anything but that, there is an element of risk that's being taken on. The sleep well at night model that we've just walked through is considerably less risky and more stable than a short-term rehab project where you're going to buy a property, rehabilitate it, and flip it effectively 18 or 24 months later. It's less risky in virtue of the way that we do it than simply doing an individual syndication like that. And the reason for that is our model in at Mara Poling, we have a fund that our clients participate in, which owns a portfolio of assets, which adds another layer of security through that diversification. And it's a portfolio that functions over time, which means we have an investment in an asset, then that asset sells, and we use a 1031 and go to a replacement asset and so on. And that long-term position in multifamily, not long in any one property, but that long-term position in multifamily reduces risk overall. So all of those factors together can improve the ability to sleep well at night. Now, as I said, every dollar in someone's portfolio, my portfolio certainly looks like this, every dollar is not a dollar that's a sleep well at night dollar. There's money I have that I don't want to ever lose. It's money that I know I've worked real hard for and that I have long-term plans for. And I also have some money, and I learned this a long time ago, I've also got some money that's, I won't say play money, that sounds a little flippant, but it's money that I'm comfortable being more speculative with. And I will invest that in assets, whether it be real estate or equities or other investments that have more risk associated with them. It's, for me personally, a small portion of my overall portfolio. It kind of scratches that itch, if you will, to do something that's a little more exciting. And it's small enough that if and when there are issues, and those types of assets seriously can have issues, I'm not going to be high and dry because I haven't put my swan money, my sleep well at night money in there. So when you're thinking about a swan investment, a sleep well at night investment, again, whether you're building a portfolio of your own of single families or duplexes or whatever it might be, or you're looking to partner with someone like Mara Poling, you want to be thinking about that relative to that portion of your portfolio and how you might deploy it, whether it's individual syndications or, as I just described, in a portfolio as we put together for our particular clients. And those are some of the items that you might pay attention to when you're evaluating an investment. What market is it in? What class is it? Is it a performing asset that's being improved, a light value add, or is it an asset where there's a big rehab going on? What kind of leverage is involved? Is it modest? Is it really aggressive? What do those stress tests look like? How conservative is the underwrite? You know, one of the things that leaps out at me often, I actually this morning had somebody send me a deal. Hey, can you take a look at this for me? And by the way, you're more than welcome to do that. Shoot me an email, pat@marapoling.com. I'm happy to look at anything you might be looking at. I will not give you feedback on that individual deal. I will, however, give you some thoughts on how you can analyze that deal, things that you can go through and look at. And if you want to engage me in that, that's fine. This particular one that the individual shared with me was interesting because it actually had an exit cap that was a full 75 basis points lower than the current market and where they were currently purchasing that asset. So that doesn't mean it's a bad underwrite. It simply means it's a pretty aggressive underwrite. They're actually counting on or believe that cap rates are going to continue to move down. They certainly could. They're not at zero, right? So they could mathematically go lower. I don't think there's too many folks out there that think we're headed towards a period of time where cap rates are going to be reducing. Cap rates have been pretty stable in most markets for some time now. They may move up a little bit, although it would appear that there's more than enough buyer and investor interest in the marketplace that cap rates will probably stay where they are for a bit. That seems to be the general gist in the industry, but that's an example of a not sleep well at night investment where there's some aggressive assumptions. Doesn't mean it's a bad investment, right? That could be a great investment for someone's more speculative money, but just got to fit with the right dollars. So shoot me an email if you have questions, pat@marapoling.com. I hope you have found today's session valuable. If you have, please make sure you subscribe so you get a chance to join us each and every week. And be sure to check in next week for another episode of Multifamily Real Estate Investing presented by Mara Poling.